When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity, helping people unfortunate enough to have a diagnosis of cancer and their carers to learn about integrative medicine, a broad, inclusive approach to cancer care that we've been championing for nearly two decades. Integrative medicine is the future of cancer care. It's now not a matter of if, but of when. Integrative oncology is simply far better oncology, better in terms of addressing all the needs of those with cancer, and in terms of results, quality of life, and outcomes. Bob Jacobs has been in the vanguard of the integrative cancer care movement, working for many years giving support as a functional medicine practitioner. Today, we're going to be overviewing the recently developed science of oncogenomics and hearing how it can contribute to successful outcomes.
Hi, Bob. Great to have you as my guest on the show.
My great pleasure.
Yeah, well, it's been far, far too long since we last spoke, and a great deal of water has gone under the proverbial bridge since then. In fact, I'd say that the topic of today's chat had barely begun to cause a ripple back then. This is oncogenomics, which I guess you could describe as the study of the relationship between the incidence and progress of cancers and the expression of a particular subset of genes or oncogenes. How did I do?
Perfect.
Yeah, good. All right.
Because in the old days, it used to be thought of as like this one gene that causes a type of cancer.
Right.
And with the oncogenomics, what we find when we test for a kind of cancer, there's probably 30 genes at any given type of cancer that all relate to its cause for that particular right. cell type. So when we run this, the advantage is it tells us specifically if a person was to have a type of a chemotherapy, what exactly would be the right therapy. And After I run this, I give this to the oncologist. So were they to use a chemo, they would know the very best one for that cell type. Or if they were to use a monoclonal antibody or other traditional medication, exactly the one that would work for that cell type.
Good.
And then it gives me a list of all the natural supplements that would work for that cell type. So I can literally, you know, you can look at it and make sure that cancer has been hit in the best way possible. And then on top of that, if you want to follow up, say, in 6 months or a year, how are we doing? You could do that as another test called the Oncotrace, which shows for that cell type, that cancer, they retest those genes and you want to see them all say switched off, negative, negative, negative. And then you know, okay, everything that was that created that is now gone and is off. So then year by year, you can redo that test and confirm it's all switched off. So you don't have a surprise down the road.
Right.
And so say if you retest that Oncotrace in so many months or so many years, and you find that one of those 30 genes that went from off to on you don't have cancer again, but it's kind of a heads up. You know, what did create this and what do we do about it? And
right. A warning shot.
So then you just switch it off. Maybe it was green tea. Yeah, maybe it was green tea that switched it off, or vitamin D, or, you know, maybe you stopped a certain food that was a trigger, and then you can retest it, and yeah, it's all off again. And so that, because it isn't one thing, it's a combination of all those triggers that lead to the creation, and then you can confirm it stays off, yeah. And then you're done.
All right. Well, you know, this move into genomics was it's all down to the development of the technique to be able to sequence the genome in the first place. And clearly this was a major scientific step. And as you point out, scientists were pretty convinced back then it was going to lead them straight to some cancer cures once they'd been able to do this. But as we now know, it didn't really turn out that way. And we're back with a far older idea is sort of surfacing again and really building its place in science, which is the metabolic picture of cancer. It's just curious to me that we have all this wealth of genetic information because of this pursuit of genes as being the root cause of cancer. And this was done with no thought of metabolism. And yet many people now are actually looking at the metabolism of cancer and are able to use the genetic information rather than the way you've just been describing to help them to target the cancer. So it's a curious sort of middle ground we've come up with now where this genetic information is being used and is being used to help treat cancer metabolically.
Correct. And then what we're talking about at the seminar is, and that's been fascinating to me, is we can even go to one step earlier, and that is a recent development of autoimmune triggers. If a person has an autoimmune trigger to a substance, a food or a chemical, they would have had that their whole life. And if in your whole life you react, say, hypothetically to gluten, and you don't know it, and so doesn't bother you particularly, an antibody to one of the 30 gluten's, that causes celiac disease.
Ugh.
Now, if a person has celiac, they know because they're bleeding. I can send you a copy of a sample report. And that just the panel for just glutens has 30 different glutens. Only one of those 30 causes celiac. The other 29 cause different inflammation to different parts of your body, not your colon.
Ugh.
And there's another panel that I test for other foods. One of those foods, a component of dairy, causes multiple sclerosis and lupus. One food. Now, if you know that ahead of time, you can avoid having that problem.
Right.
So, for example, there's a woman who had me test her six-year-old daughter. And we tested the six-year-old, and she was off the chart. That one component of dairy that causes multiple sclerosis. She's 6 years old. So I said to this little girl, no matter what you do your whole life, you can never drink milk. Now she doesn't have to have MS when she's 20.
Right.
So that's the beauty of it, is preventing.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if there is a cause for cancer, who knows? But stopping inflammation from the beginning helps a lot.
It has to be good.
Because,
absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've said to oncologists, is there a cause for cancer? And they all say, well, depending on the kind of cancer, there isn't one cause. Then I also said, if a person had inflammation their whole life, would they be predisposed to getting cancer? Every oncologist said, yeah, they would. Inflammation is not a good thing.
Right. They all agree about that.
Yeah. And so now that we can find out with autoimmune, because again, that's from birth, a lot of people have these, one or more of these foods. And so it's shocking how many people, most people have something.
Right.
Occasionally you run into someone who doesn't have any reaction.
So that's the minority then?
By far the minority.
Interesting.
Most people have something.
Mm.
So at the minimum, to stop that trigger by stopping that food, you don't cure the trigger. You can't cure autoimmune. You just take the food out. Well, if I ran a test for you and you were reacted to a given food, And I said, all you have to do is not have that food. Would you care? You just take the food out. Then whatever's going on in your body, whether it creates MS or other diseases or cancer, well, that's gone. You can't eat the food. Who cares?
Right.
To not have dairy and not have multiple sclerosis is kind of a big deal.
Yep.
Or not have a cancer. And then another thing about with Cyrex is another interesting aspect of it, is it shows, are there any deep infections in the body that have long-term created an ongoing inflammation? Because again, that's something that you wouldn't see in the current state, meaning, well, I'll give you an example. There's a woman who comes here who had inflammation of her heart. And her cardiologist said the inflammation of the heart was so severe, he wants her to be on steroids the rest of her life.
But
she's 50. Exactly. I said, not my first choice.
No.
So I said, if we can find out the cause, that would be better. If we ran the Cyrex test, then it turns out she didn't react to a food, but she had one infection with an organism called Borrelia. It was way off the chart.
Well.
And a past infection, meaning the infection she had was probably 20 years ago, leading to the chain of events year by year that now causes her heart inflammation. So I told the cardiologist this, and he said he'd never heard that. He had no idea that Borrelia, I mean, he knew what it was that could cause that. It was all news to him. But he said, look, because I said, I can repair the infections. Once I've seen that with the Cyrex, I can repair it using a homeopathic dose out of that organism. So he said, look, this is all news to him, but he'll give me 3 months. If I can clear up in 3 months, what can he say?
Right.
So I gave her the treatment for Borrelia, cleared up the Borrelia. She had no heart inflammation, needed no drugs, no steroids. It was gone.
Amazing. Great result.
Yeah. So if we understand what are the causes of inflammation, autoimmune triggers, infections are the burning flame that lead to a lot of diseases.
Right.
Rheumatoid arthritis, cancers, and when we stop that, eczema, we stop that, and then the manifestation is gone. They can't have that food, or we clear that infection, but who cares? They're not have eczema anymore, but you can't have dairy.
Right, right. Okay, yeah, a small price to pay to avoid a horrible disease.
Exactly.
So look, one thing I wanted to clear up, because I know there's a lot of confusion about this, is that the difference between, the type of testing, which has been around a lot longer, available a lot longer than the tests you've just been talking about, and which, of course, you've been using for many years, which are functional tests. And
yeah.
People don't, I think, necessarily understand the difference between these genetic tests, the genetic information, and the functional tests, but they are fundamentally different, aren't they? They're giving you a different kind of information. So I wonder whether you'd pick it apart a bit and just explain the difference.
Okay. The functional test shows us what is the cause of inflammation, what's causing malabsorption, your current level of nutrients. Is there anything blocking your body from functioning normally? And we can now know that with simple blood work. That's the beauty of it. You can find out, is there an autoimmune food? Is there blocked absorption? Is there an organ that's malfunctioning? And you literally can put everything into a perfect state from a functional point of view, where the liver is detoxifying properly. You stopped all the autoimmune triggers from foods by changing the diet. You're helping the body detoxify properly so that you can literally, and now we've got forced lab work to show you, so we're not guessing what the triggers are, what the functional state of the organs are, and so we put it all into a perfect state. So in doing that, what is your chance for developing any kind of disease? Now, if you do have a disease, by putting everything functionally better, then whatever treatment you choose to have for that disease can go unobstructed.
Right.
Even if you have to do a drug, it's at least you're not having the cause that created the disease is gone. The nutrient deficiencies linked to the disease are gone. Now the drug's helping stop the current manifestation. It all works together.
Right.
And again, with functional medicine, if a person did need a drug and that drug has some stress to the body, you can see what that's doing and compensate for that as well. So that, because again, I'm not opposed to pharmaceutical chemistry and intervention, but you don't want it to hurt the body. You want it to help. And if we can find a trigger and a cause and not need the pharmaceutical, great. But if we can't, at least we can help the pharmaceutical intervention work better.
Right.
And then go on beyond that, knowing the genes, and help the repair last.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So if we bring this back to the example that you were giving of like a food intolerance, so you can do a functional test which will show that there's something going on there and can even point you towards what it is that's causing it.
Yeah.
But a genetic test would be about a predisposition you have rather than anything actually happening. Is that fair?
Well, not exactly. I mean, in the sense that you use the word intolerance.
Okay.
And the food types of tests I'm talking about, they're not intolerances. They're autoimmune.
Okay.
That's different. The intolerance is an IgE antibody. The autoimmune is an IgG antibody. And it is genetic. You inherit it. So in a sense, that's the beginning of a genetic problem.
Right.
So if a person is, for example, celiac or gluten reactive, they inherited that.
Yes.
From their whole life, they've had it. That is genetic. And they can't do it. The key is you just avoid that trigger, and then all the manifestations of that don't happen anymore. And then your body can heal and reverse it. But that is the genetic side of things.
Correct.
Genetic cause of illness.
Right. But in the case of an intolerance, then, you it's similar in terms of the way it affects you, and that it causes inflammation. But is the reason it's happening is different to, it's not something you were just handed on genetically. It's for another
intolerance, reason. You can develop an intolerance, an IgE antibody. Okay. So say, for example, every time you have dairy, you get a sinus effect, or you get kind of mucus in your respiratory
yes.
tract. Then you may find by helping your immune system or having some type of desensitization to dairy, that goes away. It's gone. So that's those IgE antibodies. Whereas an autoimmune, nothing changes it. It's there continuously.
All right. Interesting. Okay. But in terms of your state of health, the conditions that come from either type of irritation to the system, if you like, are they similar, the same? I mean, you, as for instance, say you have an intolerance for some food and you eat it consistently all the time, are you going to be just as prone to the type of diseases that might follow as you would be if you had a genetic predisposition to be unable to deal with that food?
Not really, because if you have an intolerance, an IgE antibody, then you get allergic symptoms.
Okay.
But it never gets worse than that. But you get allergic symptoms. But your immune system doesn't attack you. You get allergic symptoms. Whereas the autoimmune, your immune system now attacks your own tissues. So now your immune system is attacking your body. The antibodies from an autoimmune food, those antibodies target the body itself, not giving you allergic symptoms. So it's a different effect. Like, for example, with multiple sclerosis, reacting to that one milk fat protein called milk proteinorphelin, person may have no symptoms. They don't have a reaction to dairy. They don't get mucus or sinus from dairy. They don't know. Dairy is fine to them. It's a good food. But the brain's starting to be injured.
Interesting.
And then eventually they have actual brain damage after so many years of that effect. And then that brain damage, if they stop the trigger at that point, the brain tries to repair itself, but it's been
right.
hammered away by the immune system for years.
Yeah. Okay. Tough call. So it's a fundamentally different situation. That's interesting.
Yeah. Fundamentally different.
Yeah. And so you would have these different types of tests for different reasons then. You would be actually looking for something different.
Yes. So if you want just, you know, from a functional point of view, wanting someone just to be well, whether they had a cancer or a disease or they were just totally healthy, with a functional point of view, you'd first want to make sure that no foods were hurting their body, no triggers. Then you would make sure there was no deep infections in the body. So then you know the immune system unobstructed and not attacking the body itself. Then you can look at, from a functional point of view, is the body now getting everything it needs and functioning normally? There's no chronic intestinal infection. There's no weakness in the given organ systems. The body is doing well. But if you get to that point, then if a person had a disease, at least now the body's capable of repairing itself. There's no ongoing injury. Then you're just dealing with whatever that disease is, and you help it. And you can really look at, how can I make this go away now? And you may have to temporarily use chemical intervention, or you may not. You know, you may find that nutritional or herbal is all you need. But the fundamental weakness now has been repaired, and now you're trying to fix the manifestation of it.
Okay, well, it's good to pick these things apart, because it's not simple, is it?
But fortunately, it's not simple. No, the body isn't simple. But at least now you've got a way of looking at each component and not just dealing with, okay, here's a problem, how do I manage it? Instead of saying, what is the cause? And we've got a lot of ways to see the cause, reverse the cause, stop the trigger, repair the damage, and then you can go a lot further than ever before.
Right. So maybe we could talk a little bit about, give a further example of you. There you are. You're working with a cancer patient alongside they're having their conventional treatment, and you're putting in your bit to support them throughout treatment and beyond. Can you just talk through your approach, really, what you're looking for and the ways in which you would support that person?
Okay. If they were getting a chemotherapy or a type of traditional medicine, I would run the oncogenomics test to see what are they most capable of using in terms of conventional medicine to fight that cancer cell. And I give that result back to the oncologist and say, these are the drugs that they were tested as most exact for that cell type. Again, it's up to the oncologist to choose to agree with it or not, but they have the information because it's a very specific test for their cell type.
Right. And how well received is that generally?
Pretty well received. I mean, it's a formal lab work, and it's 30 pages long, and they've got all the information, and it's a fundamental lab test. And in the worst case, one time an oncologist said, yes, we agree this is the best drug to give this patient. We can't afford to give it to him. Well, you know, that can happen. But then the patient's got the information to pay for the drug themselves, you know. And then separately, to say to the patient, you know, these are the weaknesses in your body that perhaps led to the creation of this. You do the conventional treatment, that's fine. But while you're doing that, because the drugs do have a little impact on the liver, we're going to help your liver function better. We're going to help your digestive tract function better. We're going to help keep inflammation out of your body and not interfere with the drugs. The chemotherapy, the oncologist is dealing with what they have to, or if it's radiotherapy. With radiotherapy, we won't use any strong antioxidants because that can interfere with the benefits of the radiotherapy. But at the same time, make sure the body isn't weakening from the radiotherapy. So it's supporting, so the whole thing works together. So that if a conventional medicine has to be used, it's getting the maximum benefit. At the same time, we're supporting the body so the body doesn't get decimated by the drug therapy.
Yes.
And unfortunately, with conventional medicine, while it can do a lot of great things, often a person's got to recover from that. You know, they find they've lost a lot of weight, or they've gotten a lot weakened, or the immune system's weakened, or they've got another infection. So we kind of monitor and watch all of that, so that the drug therapy does its job and it doesn't leave it doesn't miss its mark.
Right. Okay, and how about for the longer term? In terms of keeping the patient well after treatment and getting them back to full health?
Well, again, that's back to now the functional medicine work, which is great because I've got all the tools to know that, you know, to stop, again, any deep infections, to help all the systems improve, liver, digestion, assimilation, metabolism, stop any heavy metals from coming in. And at that point, literally, you can put everything out of the, there's probably 150 parameters that are monitored through the functional test. And you literally, they're all fixed with nutrients. And you just literally put the body back. Everyone's individual. And you can literally repair the body and confirm with a future test that, yep, everything's back in place.
Fantastic. And in terms of, you know, the sort of hands-on results, i.e. how the patient feels, how they look, or, you know, the general presentation of the patient, do you find that the science matches up to the results?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they get results pretty quickly in terms of how they feel. And I go much deeper so that it lasts. They may say, look, after the next time or first or second session, they may say, I feel great. And I would say, yes, so many things are better, but these three things are key weak spots.
Right.
So whether you feel them or not, we have to really, you want to walk away from here and stay well. So year by year, you keep being well, not just feeling better today, so that we can go to that level of no inflammation in the body, even down to the DNA, your body's getting the nutrients, cell metabolism is good, your liver is able to detoxify properly, you're able to assimilate properly, you know, there's no ongoing infections. And with the lab work, you can really get that down to that specifics, so that a person really as an organism stays well.
Okay, well, that's very good to hear. It's very heartening, isn't it, to have so much more control? Because it certainly wasn't the case. You couldn't have done that a few years ago.
No, couldn't do it a few years ago.
Yeah.
And that's my great appreciation to Cyrex. In fact, this book,
Neuroimmunity and the Brain-Gut Connection by Aristo Vajani.
Exactly. Now, he is the scientist who invented Cyrex.
Okay.
And so he's done more than that, but, you know, it's hard science. This is not a they think this feels better or works better.
Here
you can show down to every DNA, you can show the whole inflammatory pathways, and by stopping those triggers, not only cancer but other major immune problems just are gone. So if a person was fighting cancer, didn't know that there was an ongoing source of inflammation in their body that was coming from infections or foods, that no matter what the oncologist is doing or what they're trying to do, like the fire's still burning, you know. Or if a person was...
I understand.
If a person was generally healthy and wanted just to stay healthy and prevent illness, not knowing that there's a food trigger going on that they're unaware of. So we get to that core level where, by the book, you can show everything now is good.
Brilliant. So all of that has happened pretty much in the last 20 years. I mean, during the time been doing Yes to Life, it was all good clinical judgment back then. It was like, well, you look like you need some, you know, and now it's a completely different story, really. I mean, there were some tests then, but not, you know,
not
a
like
handful
this.
Compared
yeah.
to now.
And now in the last even 10 years or 5 years, it's really advanced so much.
Yeah.
Like, again, even with the oncogenomics, you know, that's probably 10 years where you could look at the manifestation down to all the different 30 genes for any one cell type that led to that creation of the cancer. But looking at the autoimmune triggers that created the whole thing, really the last 5 years, you could say, ah, now I can understand why this even began. Because if your whole life, your body's been causing this inflammation, attacking certain tissues, then eventually the body breaks down, then eventually that tissue develops the next step, which is a cancer or other problem.
Yeah.
And now you can go back to that very beginning, and now you stop that, then all your repair steps along the way stay repaired, and then you make it different.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. Yeah. Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And another benefit that's emerging from this, as you say, hard science, which you're applying largely to nutrition, is that you suddenly do have a common language. You can speak with an oncologist. As you're saying, you're handing over your report to the oncologist, and they recognize what it is. That's the first thing. They understand the language because they now work in the territory of genes in the same kind of way. And so they can appreciate a report like that, which in the past, a much simpler report, which is maybe a functional report or whatever, they toss it aside and say, well, it's irrelevant.
Exactly.
It's given you a common language to speak, which means that you can actually begin to collaborate to help patients, which is enormously important. That is what we desperately need.
Absolutely. And also, before this kind of testing came about, if a person had a cancer, if they went to a functional practitioner, they'd say, well, let's see what we can do to help. Let's use nutrition or experience with herbs or vitamins or other treatments, diet, to help stop the cancer. And the oncologist would say, there's no proof of any of that. You know, this is the drug you use for this. So the worlds were that far apart.
Yeah.
Now, with the common denominator of the inflammation, the genes, the triggers, and following it all the way through, you can say, by stopping these key triggers leading to the inflammation, leading to the genes, all the way down to the cancer, it's one continuum. And you can have all the, you have all the biochemistry showing it from the beginning to the end. The oncologist can see it from their point of view, but you can show them all the map from the whole way through, where they're looking at using a drug intervention to what is the cause of this whole thing, and what can they do instead of drugs, and how's it affecting the body? It's all chemistry. It's all lab work, and they can read the lab work. It's not kind of an opinion, what about this, what about that? It's all lab work.
Yeah, great. And I was thinking another area in which there's sort of a common territory evolving is around the hallmarks of cancer, which they're also about 20 years old now, and they are, there's a few extras are coming along the way, but those, in a way, they're very uncontentious things because they're simply observations, really, of how cancer behaves, what it does. And so when you start talking about inflammation, as you said, the oncologist appreciates just as much as you do that inflammation is a bad thing, and particularly if it's chronic, of course.
Right.
And I think functional medicine practitioners, nutritionists, all sorts of people have appreciated that for a very long time before. The last 20 years as well. But now it's broadly appreciated by everyone. And I think it's also interesting that the hallmarks, they're kind of laid out. There's no order to them or priority to them. They just seem to be, you know, behaviors or functions of cancer. Whereas I think it's quite clear that some of those things are very much more fundamental to cancer. And other chronic diseases than others are. Some are much more symptomatic and some are much more at the early stages and causative.
Right.
And you identified their inflammation. Well, that's kind of the hotbed in which disease occurs. And so it's in some ways you could say it was more important than some other hallmarks. And that's fascinating to me. And I hope it's something that, again, sort of becomes a common understanding that what are the things that are actually tightly associated with the causation of chronic disease.
Right. And inflammation, I mean, I don't know what chronic disease exists that doesn't have inflammation at its core. You know, and no matter what the source of the chronic disease is, all the ones I know, there is at the roots of it some form of inflammation.
Right.
Whether it manifests again as Alzheimer's or cancer or rheumatoid arthritis, at the roots of it is some inflammation.
Yeah.
And so what is the inflammation? It's caused by either a reaction to a chemical, infection, food, but now we get to the bottom of all of that. So then you're dealing with how to deal with depending on what a person is fighting, how to help their manifestation. At the same time, we're stopping the causes, fundamental inflammatory triggers. Now you're working on both sides of it. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. If you don't do anything about what's driving it.
Exactly.
And of course, it's good to try and damp it down, but you know, if you're still, fuel's still coming in, it's going to be a losing battle.
And to think of your immune system as your own enemy. It's huge.
It is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want your immune system to help you, not hurt you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So very interesting. Well, that understanding that you just passed over there, which is that inflammation is something that's at the root of all chronic disease, in fact, and what particular chronic disease manifests in any one person, if you like, is just due to their circumstances, whether that's their genes, with their lifestyle, all sorts of things that play into that. But the same issue of inflammation could result in one chronic disease in one person and another one in another.
Exactly.
And I think that's quite a mature understanding in the kind of integrative world now. But again, I feel it's kind of spilling over into mainstream now, this view that inflammation, for example, is something that's right there at the base of all chronic diseases, is beginning to be widely understood now. And it is that's good, because, mainstream medicine tends to be so siloed that shared understanding doesn't really exist between one department of medicine and another. And they're busy in their parallel tracks, little realizing they're both actually looking at the same driving force.
Exactly. And also another understanding is, with conventional medicine, they take a person as, okay, this has happened. You have this problem, problem X. So we have to deal with it. You have this problem, and these are the ways we manage it. And they almost never say, what caused it?
I agree. It's not a big question in mainstream medicine, is it?
Yeah, but if you could say what caused it, you have a way of, if they have to treat it conventionally, fine, but you stop the trigger and causing it, that then you can become free of the illness. But not knowing the cause, then you're always dealing with the manifestation, managing. Now, at least we know both, you have a way of becoming well. You as this patient can say, okay, I've stopped my causes, they're managing the current manifestation. Now I can be well.
Well, it's interesting. And of course, people like you, people working long term with functional medicine, they've developed enormous skills and expertise in this field of actually helping people with these kind of issues, of dealing with the root problem of the disease. And in a way, we don't really even need mainstream medicine to gain all those skills, because it's a completely new skill set based on a completely new question. As you pointed out, they don't even ask, is it what caused this? They're not busy with that. They're busy dealing with what's in front of them. And
yep.
And the importance, though, of the teaming up, which is possible maybe through this shared language of genetics, of people like you with mainstream practitioners, though, is enormous, because you've got the people working in the way that's actually the firefighting department, if you like, you need to have a firefighting department, deals with
it. Absolutely.
And that's what mainstream medicine is. But you also then need, as you say, to get to, well, look, it's all very well damping it down, but we've got to actually stop it flaring up again. We've got to deal with the root cause. So what a great team.
Exactly. And the nice thing is, our language is shared lab work. They may say, well, we don't believe it. You can show them in lab tests. Here it is. Like the lady with the heart inflammation. I showed her cardiologist, here's the lab work. And all the research showed that this lab work is valid to this situation. But then he still wanted it gone, and we did that too. So these two worlds come together. What it's a cause of the illness, how do they manage the current manifestation of it till eventually it's resolved?
Brilliant. So maybe you want to give us some recent example of somebody with cancer that you've helped, and the ways in which you felt you were able to contribute to their reclamation of their health.
Okay. a specific person with a lymphoma.
Okay.
When we ran the oncogenomics test, it showed all the key triggers, the key genetics leading to it. I used all the natural nutrients to switch off the cancer. And it showed all the key nutrients that would do that. On the diet, I found all the triggers that led to it in the diet. They had some conventional drugs. But then down the road, once the conventional treatment was finished, I made sure with another one of the genetic testing and the Nutrivel test showing that their body stayed functionally healthy, the liver stayed okay, their body stayed functionally okay. They could digest, they could absorb.
Managed the treatment you're describing here, yeah?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then year after year, we did the Oncotrace, the follow-on genetic, to show all the genes that led to the cancer are set off, switched off, switched off. 30 genes tested year by year, all switched off. It's never come back.
Right. So what period are we talking about here?
Oh, now it's 7 years.
7 years, right.
Yeah.
That's a good result. And what stage was their disease at the time of diagnosis?
Three.
Okay, so that's advanced. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, stunning. Great result.
And you could even take stage four, because now you're dealing with, a conventional has to do their job, but you help the body not get hurt in that process, and then you help the genetics, the cause, and you really see the person. You don't have the limitations for the results that you have any other way. With stage four cancer treatment with conventional, just oncology, they tell you up front, we can't cure you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, now you have a situation where you expect to be cured. You may have to go through a lot, but you have a way forward because you're dealing with the cause, manifestation, support of the body, as well as conventional.
So when you say cured from a stage three or four cancer, I mean, of course, I've come across lots of people who live with cancer very long term, despite a very poor prognosis. And the word cure in their case would have included in it, the potential for cancer is much greater than it would have been before they ever had cancer. So they're living cancer-free or with cancer that's under control, but there are steps they're taking ongoingly. You know, that's nearly always the case. They have some sort of protocol they're following or whatever, which is maintaining great quality of life. And but that's how it goes. So a cure in people's minds means, it stopped all the medicine, it's all done, it's gone away. And it doesn't quite look like that in cancer, does it?
No, it doesn't. But once you get to the point with the oncogenomics test showing what the triggers are, and you switch off all those genes and they stayed switched off, then you may not need any further manifestation. You may not need any further treatment. You just periodically make sure all those genes stayed switched off. Then you are, it's gone.
Right. It's interesting. Okay.
So you can track it, and you can see step by step, year by year, all those genes stay switched off. And if a gene goes back on, you don't have cancer again, but one of the 20 or 30 genes that contributed to create the cancer now has become active, and maybe it's a dietary thing you did that changed it, or maybe you take certain vitamins, switch it off again. So you just watch and see once you've cleared it. And if it's an autoimmune trigger to a food, again, with that one test, you know if those food triggers, those are part of your body. So you stop those foods anyway, because, you know, it goes way beyond cancer. What if you reacted to a food and it's causing impacts on your brain or your heart, or, you know, you want to know that anyway, so that beyond cancer, at a core level, you're just healthy.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay, so you've got a very good kind of early warning system for just keeping an eye on things. And you're saying this is something that you would generally recommend somebody does annually.
If a person has cancer and you're working on that side, then I would do the Oncotrace as a follow-up annually to start with.
Right.
And then if it keeps showing better, you know, gone, maybe it's every 2 years, every 3 years, depending on what they want and the type of cancer, but doesn't have to be annually. If it keeps manifesting as negative across the board, maybe it's every 2 years, 3 years, depending on the kind of cancer in the person.
Very interesting. Okay, well, look, we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks so much for coming on the show today. Over the years, you continue to have a significant impact on the lives of many, many people with cancer, as well as other complex diseases. And that's a real lifeline in the most challenging situations. So we're extremely fortunate to have people like you around with your expertise and your experience there. Yeah, so, and it's great to have you on the show today to share it around as well.
Well, thank you very much. And I will send you by email copies of these different tests so you can see them, because I think you'll be impressed. I'm so grateful to the labs, because these are just lab tests, but it's that formal. And now that we have a common language between every aspect of medicine, conventional, oncology, traditional, GPs, natural medicine, it's all now we have one shared lab work. And that lab work, and it's all covered by insurance. You know, insurance can cover itself, formal lab work.
Really?
It's a big deal.
Well, that is fantastic. Okay. Thanks very much indeed, Bob.
My great pleasure. You take care.
Bye.
Bye.
You can find out more about Bob Jacobs and his work at robertjacobshealth.com. If you're new to the show or to integrative medicine, then I highly recommend you consider coming to the Yes to Life annual conference in the autumn. It's on October the 7th in central London, and it's a fantastic opportunity to learn about the wealth of resources in integrative medicine and to experience some supportive practices firsthand. The event will focus an enormous amount of expertise and experience into one day, which is priced to be as affordable as possible for those with cancer who may be managing on a very low budget. You can read all about the speakers and the program on the dedicated event website at yestolifeannualconference.org, or you can find your way there from the event section of the main Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. You can also book your place there at an even lower early bird price. Thanks for listening today. Please join me again next week for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.